Very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 3rd December 2017. We are at Wu Bing Jing Se. It's a Sunday. Today we are going through the 6th Patriarch Black Form Sutta, Lesson 63. Okay, before that, let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya. Then mindfully we shall commence the puja. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Vutang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majjhapamadatthana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Buddhang pujami. Dhammang pujami. Sanghang pujami. Okay, you all can be seated. Then maintain some form of attention. Then Then turn the page 1, verse for opening the sutta. Verse for opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true teaching. Then we turn to page 303, 303, the sutta part, the last paragraph. The sutta said, you should now know that deluded people mistook the union of five hips. So this reunion of five hips is the five aggregates of form and mind for their own bodies and discriminated dhammas as external to themselves. They love life but dread death and drift from thought to thought, not knowing that this illusionary dream is empty and false. They turn vainly around on the wheel of birth and death and mistook the permanence and bliss of Nirvana for a form of suffering. All day long they sought after something else. Taking pity on them, the Buddha made manifest in the space of an instant the true bliss of Nirvana, which has no mark of production or extinction. It has no production or extinction to be extinguished. That then is the manifestation of tranquil extinction. Its manifestation cannot be reckoned. It is permanent and blissful. How can you call it one substance with five functions? Worst of all, how can you say that Nirvana suppresses all Dhamma, causing them to be forever unproduced? That is to slander the Buddha and defame the Dhamma. So that shows the delusion of that particular monk, the bhikkhu. Okay, we go to the commentaries. The Buddha spoke of those who thought that their bodies were actually made up of the union of the five hips, means the five aggregates, and who thought Dhamma were something external to themselves. They were attached to life and death because they didn't know that everything is like a dream, a bubble, a lightning flash, or a dewdrop, illusionary. So this description came from the famous Diamond Sutta poem. All of conditioned existence, they are dependent originating. That's why it's called conditioned Dhamma. They are not real. Zu mong. Mong is like a dream state. Huan is an illusion. Pao is bubble, like a bubble. The moment it arrives, it passes away very fast. Yin, yin, yin zi, shadow. Your shadow always follow you. And shadow is not real. You are chasing after your own reflection. Therefore, they underwent birth and death over and over again. That's what samsara is all about. The cycle of birth and death. Unending birth and death. Uselessly and pitifully spin on the wheel of the sixth path of rebirth. In Mahayana, they got this description, Liu Tao Lun Hui. The sixth path, they call it. They simplify the 31 plane of existence into just six. The first four, which is the willful state or suffering rhyme, They call it the they got a happy rhyme, huh? Happy rhyme is Kamaloka, yeah, the sensual rhyme, huh? Which is Kama Sukati. And they got a woeful rhyme which they call Kama Dukati. So this word Kama is a different word. It is just K-A-M-A. This one is not the Kama. So this Kama is rhyme. Loka is world. Kama Loka is the sensual world. Sensual world. So sensual world got two types. One type is Kama Loka Sukati. This is the happy line rhyme, Sukati. Then the other one is Kama Loka Dukati. So this is a suffering rhyme. Or sometimes they call it the woeful state, suffering rhyme, or woeful states. Means they suffer a lot. This one is the happy rhyme. So the sensual rhyme of happiness and the sensual rhyme of suffering. Kama Dukati. This one we got four. These are your demon. The demon rhyme. Then you have your animal rhyme. Then you have your third one is your hungry ghost. Hungry ghost rhyme, or beta, they call it the beta. Or the beta rhyme. Beta rhyme. Then of course the last one is hell rhyme. So these are the four suffering rhyme. Kama Dukati. So these four is the same. Then this one, Sukati, got two. The first one is the human rhyme. The human rhyme. This one also same. Then after that, they have the other heavenly rhyme. Heavenly rhyme. So this heavenly rhyme is the heavens. So the heavens, they got the Deva rhymes, six Deva rhymes, 16 Brahma rhyme, and the four formless rhyme. So you add them all up, they also form 31. So up there you got the six devas, 6 plus 16, Brahma plus 4 equals to 26. So 26 you add the human rhyme, 127. Then you add the 4. This one 4. So total equals to 31. So this is how the 31 planar existence comes about. So this 31 plane of existence, covers all of existence within the conditioned world. So in the Sutta and Xuanhua's commentary, when they talk about the six rhyme, they are as summarized on the whiteboard as explained by me just now. So they simplify the heavenly rhyme, which has a total of 26. Use the mic for the recording. Press it out all the way. Push it out all. Full. Okay.
Yeah, brother. Yes. It's a simple thing only. I think you missed out N in the heavenly.
What is it?
You missed out N in the heavenly. Eh?
What is N in the
heavenly?
Oh, the spelling. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for pointing out. The N is missing. Yes. Thank you. There is a spelling error. There is an N. So that is the heavenly, right? They call it the heavens, Tian Fa Jie. So the heavenly rhyme are all the Deva rhyme, the Brahma rhyme, and the formless rhyme. So under Mahayana, they lump everything together as the heavenly rhyme. So in Mandarin, it's called Tian Fa Jie. Then this one is human rhyme, Zhong Sen Fa Jie. Then you got the hell rhyme, Di. Then you got the hungry ghost. Hungry ghost, what you all call? Er Gui Tao. Then Zhong Sen Tao. Then demon, what you all call? Demon. No, demon is new Gui Se Sen. Demon. Asura, yes, Asura. Asura is part of the demon. Gandhaba, Asura, all these are demons. Demons are full of anger. I don't know what they call it in Mahayana. It could be more. What more? No. It's declassified down. It's not the heavenly rhyme. They are the demons. Demons. They are the earthbound. They are the earthbound devas who have violated the heavenly what they call rules. So they banish them down to the heavenly realm because they have a lot of anger. So they take birth as demons. Demon is, last time I used to use that word, I forgot already. Xuanhua every time mentioned that word. Tian Fa Jie, Ren Fa Jie. And they got this, what they call. That's why he always say, Tian Pu Si Jiu Jing De Kuai Le. Means if you are reborn in the heavens, it's not an eternal heaven, it's not an eternal bliss. Because once your good karma is used up, you will drop, you will fall. Maybe initially, most of them will fall to the human realm. Then you continue with your evil action, your delusion, and your greed, your selfishness, you will fall down to the woeful realm. You go and check up the Mandarin for demon. You just key in 31 plane of existence. Or 六道轮回, then the thing will come out already in Mandarin. Cannot find. Never mind, just leave it. Do you have the chart, the 31 plane of existence? The chart got Mandarin. The 31. No, no. You must have the actual chart. But the actual chart got a Mandarin one. The Han Sutta also got a Mandarin version. The Han Sutta also got a Mandarin version. It's in the appendix. When I speak about the 10 Dhamma rites, 十法界, you turn to the Han Sutta. I passed you last week, isn't it? One copy. You just check that one. The 10 Dhamma rites, 十法界 is mentioned there. Okay, while waiting for Miss Lee, we can continue. They underwent birth and death over and over again, uselessly and painfully, spinning on the wheel of the six paths of rebirth. So these six paths of rebirth is what the Mahayana classified as the six paths, 六道轮回, the six path of birth and death. It's the same as the 31 plane of existence. What? Tian is heaven. How you read in Mandarin? Yeah, what is the Mandarin word? This one, Asura. Asura Fajie, Asura, yeah, demon. The demon is an English word. Asura is the equivalent Pali word, the Asuras. So these Asuras are called demons. So they are considered as one of the demon rhymes. Asura, correct. They use this word. Good, thank you. So, under the appendix 5, they have the 10 Dhamma rhymes. These 10 Dhamma rhymes, you read through them, you will understand better. So, I will make use of this condition to read through to you. Appendix 5 of the Heart Sutta, short note. 10 Dhamma rhymes, 四法界. So, the highest of all these rhymes is the rhyme of the Buddha. The Mandarin word is it 诸佛or 诸佛法界? These are the fully enlightened Sammasambuddha. They have perfected their 10 perfection and perfected their wisdom to prajna paramitas needed to become a Sammasambuddha. Then you got the Dhamma rhyme of the Bodhisattva, 菩萨法界. They cultivate the 10 perfection and the perfection of wisdom to realize Samyak Sambodhi and ultimate Nirvana, means to become Sammasambuddha. They are called Bodhisattva. They walk the path of Bodhisattva to cultivate to perfection and realize Sammasambuddhahood. Then there is a rhyme of the conditioned enlightened one. You are called what? Yuan, is it Yuan Jie? Yuan Jie Fa Jie? Is the Mandarin word Yuan Jie? This one, third one. Yuan Jie. Yuan Jie. Those that are enlightened to condition, the conditioned enlightened one. So this conditioned enlightened one, they are particular Buddhas, yeah? Particular Buddhas, or during the time when there is no Buddha Sasana, there is no Four Noble Truths, but they awaken to the dwelling, dependent origination, condition arising. Yeah. So that's why they are called the conditioned enlightened ones. Mm. 圆觉法界, huh? Then the fourth one is the sound hearer, huh? Rhyme of the sound hearer or Savaka. So this sound hearer, they are the sainthood way. Those who cultivate sainthood way, they will realize through hearing the truth as proclaimed by the Buddha. That's why these are called sound hearer. They hear the teaching or the sounds or the teaching as proclaimed by the Buddha. In Mahayana or Mandarin, they call it Senwen. Senwen, the sound hearer. So when the Buddha Sasana is around, when the teaching is around, they cultivate via hearing the Four Noble Truths as proclaimed by the Buddha. These are the four pairs of enlightened beings, namely the Sotapat, Sakadagami, Anagami, and Arahats, or Arahants. They got the path and fruition. That's why they are one pair each. So four times two is eight. The entire individual or four pairs of enlightened beings. Mm. Then after that, you have your heavenly rhyme, the Deva rhymes, the Brahma rhymes, and the formless rhyme. Mm. So they call it the Tian Ren Fa Jie. Then Ren Dao Fa Jie means the human rhyme, rhyme of the humans. So these are called the happy rhyme. Mm. Then they have the rhyme of the Asura, or demon rhymes. But here under Mahayana, I don't know why they classify them as the happy rhyme too. Kama Sukhati. Then the other three rhymes, the animal rhymes, the petas or hungry ghost rhyme and the hell rhyme, they are classified as Kama Dukkati, or suffering rhyme. So those who are born in the animal rhyme, they are mainly deluded people who has very strong evil roots of delusion. Then those who are born as asura or demons, they have the evil roots of anger, hatred, envy, jealousy, very strong. Then hungry ghost is because of their greed, their greediness, their selfishness. Then of course the hell rhyme, they have all the three, greed, hatred and delusion, or a combination of them. So these are the 10 Dhamma rhymes. So as per Mahayana, asura are classified under the happy rhyme of Kama Sukhati. They have blessings, but they also have the evil roots of hatred, hence the reason why they are very combative in nature. They always fight with the heavens. As per the Theravada tradition, asura are grouped under the woeful state of Kama Dukkati. They are termed suffering, right? So it's dependent on who actually define it. So Mahayana take into consideration certain merits that the demons has done. To be born as demon, they got certain type of spiritual power, just like devas. They are like devas, except they got the evil root of anger, hatred. That's why they also got what they call spiritual powers. Not really spiritual in the sense, like certain type of psychic ability. So they also, Mandarin you all call Fa Li. Fa Li. They got certain type of very, very extraordinary superpowers too. And that's why they can fight with the heavens. Especially the first Deva rhyme, the four heavenly kings. So all this, you will understand when you reflect back on what the Buddha has taught you in the sharing of merits. When you share merits, he always asks you to chant Akasata Chia Bhumata. Then devas and nagas of mighty power, may all beings living on earth and the heavens, means devas and nagas of mighty power. So some of these nagas, they are actually part of the asura rhyme. So because they are near to earth, they live between the heavenly rhyme and the earthly rhyme. So they are called earthbound. Earthbound. Some they call them devas too, earthbound devas. But many of them are asuras. And during the Buddha's time, he used a number of names to describe them. Gandhabas is one of them, I remember. Then many other terms. Okay, so this is for your extra understanding. Okay, we move on. Some people thought that the wonderful virtue of Nirvana were a kind of suffering, but the Buddha mercifully revealed it to them, the true happiness of Nirvana, whereby, the true happiness of Nirvana, where there is no mark of production and no mark of extinction. Further, there is absolutely no extinction of production and extinction, because right within production and extinction, there appears the state of non-production and non-extinction. That is the manifestation of tranquil extinction. So this is the part that the sutta mentioned. Tranquil extinction. Pu sen pu mie. Because nothing is produced. So when nothing is produced, nothing ceases. No production. No extinction. That's how Nirvana come about. And Nirvana is the complete unconditioned. They have neither production nor extinction. It's the unconditioned. And it can only come into being when the conditioned world or the conditioned state or existence that is connected to your nature ceases. So when the conditioned state, which is the mundane mind, cease, then Nirvana can be realized, or it will just manifest. That's why they call it the true nature, the true mind, the original nature. So all this can manifest, and you will understand what this is, because the form and mind that is connected to it will know. After the thing come out, it will see the whole process of creation, regeneration, how consciousness come to be, how the whole of life and existence start, then how it animate the form and mind into an entity, which you think is real, you think is a human being or a living being. Then that form and mind, when it manifests, it created the phenomenal world. That's why mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. That mind is the conditioned arising mind, mundane mind. The mind born of rebirth consciousness. Or conditioned arising state. Okay, we move on. You can't say that the manifestation of tranquil extinction is so long or so short, so high or so wide. It is a kind of permanent happiness which is without an enjoyer or a non-enjoyer. So this one we explained last week. If you like to have this kind of happiness, you should know that there is no one who enjoys it or does not enjoy it. Why? It is the manifestation of the original nature. But Xuanhua used the word self-nature. Actually, it's the original nature, true nature. So here the word self is not so appropriate. It's the true original nature. We have already explained the unconditioned. Unconditioned means there is nothing inside there. It doesn't belong to anyone. That's why the Buddha mentioned Sabbe Dhamma Anatta. Even in the unconditioned, Dhamma means the condition and the unconditioned. Both are Dhammas. These are two. But even within the unconditioned, it's also Anatta, not a permanent and unchanging entity, or an entity that you can cling on to, hold on to, and say, "This is me. This is I." So there is no such thing. And because there is no such thing within the unconditioned, so how can there be a person who realizes Nibbana is impossible? Then, we ask the question, in the sutta is mentioned, Nibbana paramang sukhang. Nibbana is the highest bliss. So they thought, the person who is enlightened can experience this Nibbanic bliss. It's not a person. It's the metaphor, or the play of word to express what constitutes the highest bliss. When there is no condition arising mind, mundane mind, relatively, when you experience that cessation, means the form and mind go through the cessation. The form and mind realize itself and cease. Then the manifestation of the unconditioned, which is Nibbana. The form and mind that goes through that, after it come out, will understand this is the highest bliss. That there is nothing inside there. Whatever that is within the conditioned state, the mundane mind, even no matter how pure, how tranquil, how still you may meditate and realize those states, but there is still suffering inside there, very fine. Even to arise the pure awareness, the conscious mind, every moment of consciousness or knowing is suffering. So if you compare it to the mundane mind, then you will come to know Nibbana is the highest bliss. The highest peace. Nothing else can be better than that. So that's how that description of the Nibbanic experience comes about. But Nibbana can never be experienced where there is nobody inside there. It's the unconditioned. There is nothing there. So there is no such thing as bliss or what. But these are metaphor or words used to explain what Nibbana is. Because Nibbana cannot be spoken or expressed. You can try to use words to describe it, to develop the analogy for it. That's the reason why you look at the text. Everything is towards the negative. It cannot be expressed. So they use the word Nibbana is free of suffering, free of craving, free of everything. And there's nobody inside. But the only thing is, when the Buddha described it as the highest bliss, he has his understanding and reason, but human being cannot understand. So they think there must be something that is experienced by the meditator. If you think that way, you contradict his teaching, and you can never realize, you can never become awakened or enlightened. So for people who don't have the realization and the understanding, it appear like contradictory, then you will end up arguing, creating a lot of argument, unnecessary misunderstanding, and all these things. So these are all unnecessary, non-important. Just have faith, cultivate, persevere, be sincere. So sincerity, faith, and perseverance will take you along. Then the form and mind will cease. Then when it ceases, the form and mind will realize what that thing is. It will understand. Okay, then we go on to the next part of the sutta. Now this one is very interesting. So Hui Ning told the monk, or the bhikkhu, to listen. He said, listen to my verse. Supreme great Nirvana is bright, perfect, permanent, still and shining. Deluded common people call it death. Other teachings hold it to be annihilation. All those who seek two vehicles regard it as non-action. Ultimately, this notion arises from feeling and form the basis for the 62 wrong views. So under the Sakyaditi Sutta, I think there is a sutta in the Theravada tradition on wrong view. They listed 62 type of wrong views. Wrongly establishing unreal names. What is the true real principle? Only one who has gone beyond measuring, penetrates without grasping or rejecting, and knows that the Dhamma of the five hips is the five aggregate, and the self within the hip. The outward appearances, a mass of images, the mark of every sound, are equally like the illusion of dreams. For him, views of common and holy do not arise, nor are explanation of Nirvana made. The two boundaries, the three limits, are cut off. All organs have their function, but there never arises the thought of the function. All dhammas are discriminated, without a thought of discrimination arising. When the fire at the aeon's end burns the bottom of the sea, and the wind blows the mountain against each other, the true permanence still extinguishes. The mark of Nirvana is thus. I have struggled to explain it, to cause you to reject your false views. Don't understand it by words alone. And maybe you will understand a bit of this. After hearing this verse, Tsutawa was greatly enlightened. Overwhelmed with joy, he made observant and withdraw. So this part was beautiful. We read the commentary. The sixth patriarch said, listen, great Nirvana is full and complete by itself, and bright. It's permanent, unchanging, and constantly illuminating. Ordinary people say that it is death, and those of non-Buddhist religion say that it is annihilation. The two vehicles of the Savaka and Pacheka Buddhas means the sainthood way and the condition arising, or condition enlightened ones. Think that is non-action, that it is uncreated and arises spontaneously. But these are all discrimination which arise from feeling or emotion, and they form the basis of the 62 wrong views. What are the 62 wrong views? The first one is the skandhas, the five aggregate is big, and I'm contained in the five aggregate. I'm big, and the heap is contained in me. The heap itself is me. I'm separate from the head. So these are the wrong view for people who don't have the awakening and the understanding. When each of the four above are applied to the five hip, which is your form, feeling, perception, activity of mind, or here they use impulse and consciousness, they make 20. Yeah? So each of these times 5 become 20 wrong views. Then the 20 multiplied by the 3 period of time, past, present and future, makes 60. Then add the 2 extreme of permanence and annihilation, makes 62. None of them are real. They are all empty and false. Then what is the true real principle? Only one who has gone beyond measuring, penetrate without grasping at or rejecting them. Therefore, he truly understands that the Dhamma of the five hips and the sound within those hips, the mark of form and sound, are all like dreams, illusion, bubbles and shadow. For him, views of common and holy do not arise. He doesn't have the view of a common person. He doesn't have the understanding of a sage. And he doesn't try to explain the bliss of Nibbana. The 2 boundaries, the 3 limits are cut off. He is attached neither to the boundary of emptiness nor to the boundary of existence. Therefore, the 3 limits of past, present and future are cut off. So this one is according to Mahayana's way of explaining this thing. So the 2 boundaries. So they had this wrong view. They think there is this emptiness and existence. So these are the 2 boundaries. Then they got the 3 limits. Means past, present and future. Then he said all organs have their function. But there never arises the thought of the function. The true suchness, self-nature, has the ability to function in accord with external condition, and yet not change. Its responsiveness is inexhaustible, and yet there is no thought of, I am functioning. All dhammas are discriminated without a thought of discrimination arising. You don't think, I am not making discrimination. If you do that, or if you do think that, you have the mark of discrimination. To be truly without discrimination is to be without the mark of non-discrimination as well. So this is a very subtle aspect of the cultivation. So when you go into all this Dhamma, you may follow what people tell you or what the text tell you, then just like a lot of cultivators, they are not aware. They heard non-duality and must not cling to positive or negative, good or bad, right or wrong. So you use that knowledge and say, I am now without duality. The moment you say that, you already have the mark of duality. You understand? Yeah, the mind that has the understanding will not mention of this. The moment you say you are what and what, means you don't understand. But that one is not you. So don't use your mundane mind to transcend all this. But that is the mundane mind telling you, I am without greed, I am without hatred, I am without craving. Now I don't attach to things anymore. Who is saying all these things? Who is saying all these things? And your thought, which is egoic, cannot understand, thinking that by saying this, you can go beyond this. No. The true awakening and realization is beyond thought. Nothing to do with the thought. That's why they cannot have a thought that say, I am enlightened. No such thing. They will know this is not me. Do you understand? So a lot of this cultivation, if you are not careful, you will be trapped in Dhamma. You will be trapped in duality, in words. Then the mark will arise. So here, Hui Ning said, Master Xuan Hui in his commentary said, to be truly without discrimination is to be without the mark of non-discrimination as well. When you still have the mark that you are beyond duality, you are not discriminating. You go and tell people, I don't have fun piercing already. I don't discriminate anymore. Who is the I? The egoic mind. That is your thought. So that's why you cannot transcend. When the fire at the end of the aeon burns the bottom of the sea, and the wind blows the mountain against each other, at the end of an aeon, there are three disasters. Flood, fire, and wind. Those who attended the Tuesday class, they will understand. According to the teaching, our world system, one great Mahakapa, the great Kapas, means one great world cycle. There are 64 minor Kapas. And this world system will get destroyed in stages. Out of the 64, you go and look at the 31 plane of existence, it's explained there. It's in the Theravada Sutta. They got a table. So this table got 8 of this column. So this one, we rub it off. Then within this 8, there is also another 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So when our world is under destruction, first they call it water. First kapha, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. Then destroyed by fire. So there are 7 destruction by water, then 1 destruction by fire. So these are repeated. Fire. Until the last kapha. The last kapha, this one is wind. So the destruction by wind is the final one. And when you hit the destruction by wind, it go up to the very high Brahma rang until the Mahabrahma. So all of the 31 plane of existence below Mahabrahma, they will go through complete destruction. So that's how the sutta come about. The world destruction. You say, when the fire at the end of the aeons burn the bottom of the sea, and wind blows the mountain against each other, means complete destruction. At the end of an aeons, means a great Mahakapa, there are 3 disasters: flood, fire, and wind. So all this, it will happen. So this one you can go back and check. Then you can go and find out for yourself. So these are not important. These are recorded in the sutta. This is just for those who have attended the Tuesday class, which I described in the sharing. It's just for information for you to understand the sutta. Okay, we continue. Good. We are finishing already. Page 308. Okay. The true permanent, still extinct bliss, the mark of Nirvana, is thus. If you have attained true permanence and the bliss of tranquil extinction, means you have realized the enlightenment, which is the realization of Nirvana, then the mark of Nirvana is just as it was explained above, and the three disasters cannot affect you, means you are out of the 31 plane. The great master concludes by saying that he has spoken the verse to encourage his listener to cast aside their present knowledge and views. When you no longer rely on the text in order to explain the sutta, he said, I will grant that you understand just a little bit of what I have said. So, Dhamma is pretty wonderful and precise. You cannot use the word to interpret and use it to try to develop the knowledge of it, because the true awakening is not knowledge. So that's the reason why it was mentioned here in the sutta. Where you no longer rely on the text in order to explain the sutta, then that is the beginning of understanding. Means you have understood winning teaching. Okay, we'll stop here. Do you have any question today? Thus far? Anybody? Yeah, you got any question you can ask? Anybody? You just have to raise your hand. Otherwise, we can have our meditation earlier today. It's now about 4:05. We still got 25 minutes for Q&A. Or anybody got any question that you want to ask? Yeah, pass the mic to PG.
Good afternoon, Rantu.
Yeah, yes.
And all Karmitas.
Yeah.
Yesterday I was looking at a YouTube that was sent by another Buddhist group, and the subject was about death and rebirth. After the talk, it was a Q&A, and one of the questions asked by this lady was, when we share merits, I think her relative passed away maybe about 3 days ago. She says, they receive the merits? And surprisingly, this this nun, they address her Babanti, addressed that, answered that there's only one realm that they can receive. If they are in the heavens, they can't receive. Anyway, they don't need it, she says. They are in a much better place than you are.
Okay.
And if they are in hell or in the animal realm, they also cannot receive. Then I go like, huh? And she says, the only one that they can receive is the hungry ghost. Brother, please comment on this.
Okay.
I know a lot of times you need to just listen
to other
talks and all this, and then
it's a very good,
we contemplate.
It's a very good question. Okay.
But I would like your comment.
First thing first, what is understanding based on what you have gone through thus far, or the Dhamma lesson? What is your understanding? Because if you don't try, you cannot understand. If every time you depend on somebody to tell you the answer, that thing won't stay inside there. I want you to express it out. What is your understanding based on what you heard?
Okay, my understanding is That's what we always chant after all our Dharma class the Akasata. That is to transfer our merits to share merits with the devas. Imina Punyang Kamena is to all those who can have the conditions and affinity to receive it.
So to
me is it goes through all the realms. So
You can share merits with any beings that have the condition to receive it. No problem.
So to me is
then transfer maybe merit. Transfer is again different after I explain all this.
Is like you always explain that different teachers they have different understanding. For students, ourselves cultivators, I think we should also use a bit of wisdom to read more and not just to take one person's view.
Correct.
Yeah.
If you can have your own understanding, then you will know what it is. Then you will know how to. They call it a screen. Then later on, you will not even want to argue with people because this is, like you say, different teacher has different understanding. Then different cultivator also have their own understanding based on their condition and their cultivation. So it's not a question about right and wrong, it's understanding. So once you have this type of understanding, then you know definitely what is being mentioned is not so correct in the sense that the Buddha did mention merit can be transferred and shared with other beings. The devas, the Dharma protectors, and all those who have the condition to receive them. Then when you have in mind your departed relative, you can still transfer merit and share merit. It's not a problem. Then whatever rhyme they may exist, when you make that determination or that sincere, pure wish to help, to share merit, to transfer merit, maybe you make offering, donation in memory of them. Of course, the person who helped the deceased to do will receive an appropriate portion of the wholesomeness depending on the understanding and the state of mind at that time. But because of the fellow piety, the love, the understanding, the kindness, the generosity, and they are related to you, karma recognizes relationship. So when you do it in memory of your parents or departed loved ones or relatives, could be your children, your spouse, or your good friend, or whatever. It has its effect. Then they will receive in accordance with the amount of karmic, what they call karmic ability to receive. So if they have that parami, whatever that the loved one do towards the departed one, because they themselves have the condition to receive, then it will be received. But if they don't have the condition to receive, it is also recorded under their karmic. Because it's just like somebody transfer money to you. Do you understand? Transfer money to you. You can receive. Because it's, that money is legitimate. Transfer to somebody who he wants to transfer to. Then how you receive it, how you use it, is up to you. But if your karma, your parami, all those things is established and you already have those good parami, well, every time you also transfer merit, share merit, and do a lot of wholesomeness to people, then when something happens to you, people will also transfer merit to you, share merit with you, and you will receive. So it's a question of understanding the karmic conditioning behind. So whatever you do, if there is understanding, there is non-evil roots based on right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood or right understanding, all this has its goodness, has its wholesomeness, has its merit, merits, and this can be dedicated transfer or share. So what they are trying to tell you is actually the reverse. You see, if you want to receive merits and all those things, normally in our earthly rhyme, we don't have to depend on people to transfer merits to us because our rhyme is different. Our rhyme, we can work. Understand? You can either go and become a farmer, that's like plowing, planting, then merchandising. It's stated in the Therokoda Sutta. We can do business, we can work for people, we can even become farmers or planters and all those things. So in our society, in our rhyme, we have means to cultivate merits and receive blessings and all those things. That's why the human rhyme is very unique. But you can also do a lot of evil if you are deluded. Then you can also become miserable, suffer, when your karmic conditioning is so bad. In the past, you hardly did any generosity. Then when you come, you have to confront hunger, war, disaster, and all these things. Then whatever you gain through karmic, it will be wiped off. Then you go through conditions that are very difficult to endure. So the sutta mentioned, if you are in this rhyme, you are more fortunate. But let's say you are born into the Pitta rhyme. Pitta rhyme, very, very tough. So that's what the Buddha said under the Therokoda Sutta. Because they cannot work, they got no income, they cannot do planting, plowing, nothing. No merchandise, no trade, nothing. The only way they can receive merit to come out of that rhyme is only through people's transfer of merits to them. Understand not? That's why the Buddha remind you to think of them in the Therokoda Sutta and make offering to the Sangha and transfer these merits down. But these are the only merits that are powerful enough to free them, to make them better. So it's the other way around, understand? It doesn't mean all the other rhyme you cannot receive. When you are born into that rhyme, you need people to transfer merit to you, understand? There is no other way you can get merit. So they confuse the two. They think if you are born in the Pitta rhyme, only you can receive. No, not this way. But what I tell you all earlier on, you can recall, if you have a lot of Dhamma friends, even let's say, you got a certain life, maybe with a lot of delusion, then you got this greed, selfishness, then you happen to be born in the Pitta rhyme. You don't have to worry, because a lot of your kayamita will send the merit, transfer the merit down, because they have a lot of parami. They were, every session, every class that they attend, they will chant. So when they chant, you will receive. Idang menya tinang hohotu sukita. So you will receive. So to be kayanamita, you have advantage. To have kayanamita as your good friend, Dhamma friend, you have advantage. But when you are a true kayanamita, you will not fall down there. That's it. But just in case, when sasana is no more, you fall down there, you don't have to worry, because all these kayamita are cultivated. Even this life you can see, they will transfer merit down. Understand? Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayu. And they repeat three times. How not to receive? Even during the Buddha's time, the moment they listen, they receive, they transform. Some become deva straight away. Some immediately take rebirth. Then their condition improve. But for me, all these are not important. Don't try to do good. To try to help, unless there is condition. Take care of your cultivation. When you have the Dhamma, when you have the understanding, the cultivation and the blessing, then you can help people. But you have to understand that there must be condition, and people wants to be helped. Otherwise, you do all those things, you get yourself into trouble for nothing. Because you got this desire to help, it's a craving. And you help without understanding. When there is no condition, also you want to help. People will tell you all on the sana. Because not everybody wants to be helped. But through the delusion, they cannot understand. To them, it's like, you are very irritating. You keep on harassing me and keep on telling me to change and keep on saying, this will help me, this will make me good. It's just like the kid. When they are not ready to listen to you, you say, boy, don't do this, don't do that. I tell you. They don't like what you do. To you may think you are helping them. No, their life, when they are deluded, they will think the other way. They want to live life differently. It's not for you to tell them. But if there is condition to help, then different. Then your nature will know. Then you will know how to approach them. Then you will know how to explain things to them. And it's only through understanding that you can accord and flow and bring about goodness, virtue, and all this can be a blessing to the world, to all of humanity and living beings. So understanding is very important. So to me, all this question about whether they receive, they don't receive, how, is a matter of understanding, views and opinion, not important. Why do you want to know all these things when you are not even ready with your own understanding and cultivation? If you can't free yourself, you cannot help others. You understand that point or not? If you yourself don't have the Dhamma, how can you help others? If you yourself cannot save yourself out of the suffering world, there is no way you can help other people to come out of the suffering world. So the main focus should be on your own cultivation, your own understanding. Then you will know how to avoid all this unnecessary discussion or argument. Because all this will lead to opinion, views, right and wrong. And sometimes you're not tactful, not careful, lead to argument. Then you quote me worse. Then they will come and challenge me, you see. Then they will read up the textbook, the sutta, and quote. He said, the Buddha say this, the Buddha say. What for? Not important. Because a lot of living beings who are not enlightened, the ego is very strong. They don't like words that are spoken that are not in accordance with what they think is correct. Especially if you are not thankful when you say something that hurt their understanding or even their teacher or their particular branch of Buddhism or their method and their technique. They can become very, very unhappy and they just want to argue with you. Then unnecessary argument will arise. Then it will lead to misunderstanding. Then it will lead to more enmity, negativity of mind state. Instead of just sharing the understanding, respect each other for what you are, then no right, no wrong. Whatever that can help you to move, receive it, have an open mind, and find out yourself and move. So that is, to me, a much better approach rather than trying to argue about which is correct, which is right. But luckily, your question is good because it brings about condition for this to be discussed. Then I can explain it so that you can avoid all this unnecessary misunderstanding. Never argue with people. Just tell them, different people have different understanding. They will explain it differently. what I understand is different. Then you can explain what you understand. Then you can even go and say what I heard from other teacher or guide is different again. And then let them decide on their own, understand or not? But when you point it out in a very clear-cut manner, people will straight away like wake up. Oh yeah, the Buddha also say, well, we can share merit and transfer merit to all the devas, the Dhamma protector, and those who have the condition to receive them. Then we can do a lot of things for our loved one, our parents, our spouse, our children. You can make offering or donation on their behalf. Sometimes you don't have to wait till they die, understand how, to do all this, to share merit, to transfer merit, to radiate love and metta. You can do it anytime. Have you heard of people telling you, last time during the early day, I remember when I was at the temple listening to Dhamma talk, people have this type of view, you know. Sometimes it's meditation class taught by certain people. They even tell you, when you read it, metta, don't read it to a dead person. You heard of this? You haven't heard of this? I think a lot of them heard of this. You say, don't read it to a dead person. See? People got different opinions. You say, dead person cannot receive your metta. What is your understanding? What is your understanding?
I think they need it more. because, like you say, especially those who are in a woeful state, there's not much they can do now. Those living beings who are able to cultivate the Dhamma, it's very worthy to be able to share.
That is one aspect of the thing. Like you say, they need it more because they may be born in the willful state and all those things. So you can do whatever you can. But the statement of when you radiate metta, you shouldn't radiate to a dead person. What I want to know is the logic behind. Why do people say that? It's because of their own views, opinion, and understanding, correct or not? So if you are somebody gullible, you listen to that because that person is in authority. You know why he's in authority? Maybe he got the title, he got the rope and other things. He say, hey, you don't play a fool. No, I went to one retreat. The monk say, clearly, you know. Then he say, wrong. That person cannot read it. So it brings about what? Unnecessary conflict, fear. Then you put fear into that person. Then that person will ask you, hey, I read it already, how? It is nonsense, isn't it? It's something that you know. Why do you want to allow all this to create fear in people and all those things? Read it, metta. You got nothing wrong, isn't it? It's radiating love and well-being, isn't it? Wishing people well-being and happiness, isn't it? It's not something evil that you shouldn't do, isn't it? No. Why you want to qualify it that way? Because they heard from people. Then they thought it's logic, you know. Die already cannot receive. Why you read it for what? But is it harmful to read it? You did nothing wrong, isn't it? You still manifest your love. You wish people well-being and happiness. They may have passed away that segmented life, understand or not? But the love, the metta, is related to that being in whatever realm of existence that he may take birth again, understand or not? Then you can read it, love and metta. In that realm, it is still the same karmic force that transforms the rebirth consciousness. So all this, if you have the understanding, you don't have to get yourself entangled, work up, fearful, argue, for what? Whatever people tell you, you have to have the understanding, like what PG mentioned just now. You have to investigate. You have to develop your own understanding. And then you inquire and develop this understanding. Then you know, yeah, the Buddha in many places also did this. Then metta can be related to all the beings in the 10 direction, in the entire existence. Then we also radiate metta to all beings. May all beings, known and unknown, seen and unseen. Then some even include past, present and future. So what's wrong with all these things? Nothing wrong. If you have love, there is nothing to worry, because you are not radiating something negative. You are radiating something positive. Why you want to worry about whether that being is still alive or dead or what? Metta is just metta. Love is just love. Kindness is just kindness. Goodness. It just allow it to flower, flourish, manifest. Then your heart will open up. You will have virtue. Then like the Buddha say, things that are fit for attention, you give attention. Means you cultivate wholesomeness, goodness, following Noble Eightfold Path. You don't go and cultivate all those that are unfit for attention, that bring about more misunderstanding, fear, worry, anxiety, argument, conflict, and all those things, or division. No point. So, if you are a cultivator, you have to be ever mindful of what you do. Are your sankhara dwelling on things that are fit for attention? Is it related to the Four Noble Truths? Mainly the Noble Eightfold Path cultivation. If it's not, they are unfit for attention. Yeah, the Buddha mentioned very clearly, those that are fit for attention are the Four Noble Truths and its three turning. And all the rest of the essential Dhamma spin off from there. So if you are dealing with something that is outside of the Four Noble Truths that leads to negativity, then you have to be mindful, you have to be heedful. Then you have to come back. That's why avoid all those questions, avoid all those unnecessary arguments. Then the next book that will come out is very good. Also based on our Six Patriarch Platform Sutta. I think lesson 3. That one I explain. The unnecessary misunderstanding that occur over the years. About Mahayana and Theravada teaching. So, I explain very clearly how Theravada and Mahayana teaching can be understood. So, understanding the Theravada and Mahayana tradition is very important. When you understand, there is no difference. There is no conflict. Both got their pros and cons. There are advantages that comes with the Theravada teaching. And they are also negative impact within the Theravada tradition. So Mahayana tradition also saying there are pro and con of their teaching. But what you need to understand as a cultivator is they are both from the same teaching, which is the Buddha Dhamma, the essence of the Buddha's teaching, the Four Noble Truths. From there, it come about, it spin off. So no need to argue. No need to cling and take side. You are Theravada or Mahayana or what? Why you want to do that? Take the best of both worlds. Then make use of it and cultivate more. Then Mahayana teaching and Theravada teaching, if it's the truth, it can be understood by the enlightened one. So whatever teaching that is in the Mahayana Sutta, if you cannot use your awakening from the Theravada Sutta to understand the Mahayana Sutta, then that Mahayana Sutta is not the right teaching. Because the same awakening from the Theravada teaching can also penetrate the Mahayana teaching, if it's the truth. So likewise, it's the other way around. We have Mahayana teaching, although it has a lot of the very, very esoteric or much higher type of sutta, is because they have a lot of these great beings that walk the Bodhisattva way to become Sammasambuddha, that come and teach the living being, the Bodhisattva. And this is how all this teaching come about. And their teaching is very elaborate, expanded on. That is their strong point, their advantages. But for people who don't understand, there are also weakness in the Mahayana teaching. One thing you will come to understand is, you go to a Mahayana temple, they don't teach you the essential basic Dhamma. They ask you to do a lot of work initially. Sweep floor, wash toilet, help out in the kitchen, chop firewood, carry. Last time I need to carry water, now maybe you got pipe water. No need. Then if you don't understand why they ask you to do all this, then you will not be able to fit in. You say, I come all the way to receive the teaching, the training, but they ask me to do all this manual work, daily chores. They're every day chanting. I also don't know what I'm doing. But the basic teaching is not there. So the weakness of Mahayana is they don't have a systematic way of teaching you the essential Dhamma, the basic teaching, to understand the Buddha's teaching. To understand how Mahayana's teaching come about and how it's all related to the essential teaching. Whereas Theravada has a strong point, because when you go into the Theravada tradition, they will teach you the life history of the Buddha, the teaching, the essence of the Buddha's teaching, the Four Noble Truths, and the essential Dhamma that's been on there. So all this is there, and most of them are retained from the Pali chanting. They are very accurate. But the problem with Theravada is, over the years, 2,000 over years, as it's passed down through chanting, the essence of the teaching's understanding is hardly there anymore. When you don't have the clear understanding of what these teachings are, then you have problem. Because the problem starts with the passing away of the Buddha. After he passed away, there was no writing. Because there was no writing, you cannot commit to books and all those things. A few hundred years later only, it was written into writing form. Then after the writing come out, it's Pali. Hardly any people know by then. Only those who know Pali, maybe they understand. So they had to go through translation. So after translation, what happened? You need people to explain, isn't it? So to explain, you call it what? Comment, isn't it? That's how the word commentaries come out. The commentary or the translation depend on the person who did. If that person only understand less than half of what the thing is, his translation is already half past six. Understand? Then the person who read the translation and come out with the commentary again may not have the real awakening. So that's how, after that, all this commentary loses its potency to bring about awakening, to bring about transformation, to benefit the cultivator, the practitioner. It's like over the year you realize one thing or not. Less and less enlightened being. Until some of the commentaries also wrote, now you can hardly find even a Sotapan. You can find a Sotapan, you are very lucky, he said. If it's the truth has been passed on down, like science, when you progress, there will be more and more progress within the scientific field. Just like our civilization, last 30 years, we progressed so fast because we developed a lot of understanding of the nature's law that governs life and existence within the scientific field. The physical law and the biological law. So if Dhamma, which is spiritual law, is also still the correct, authentic, we are like scientists, we should progress exponential. We should have enlightened beings more and more. But why are we not having this? It's because what has been taught is no longer the authentic one. the one that has the potency to awaken living beings. So over the years, because of such problem, Theravada's advantage is the Pali chanting are very accurate, but there are very few people who can explain the actual teaching. So that is the problem with Theravada. So pro and con. Come to Mahayana, because of a lot of these great beings, they read the truth, they understand. Then they can teach. But after they teach, Mahayana's problem is, they think that this is a small vehicle, Theravada. They are not interested in all the things that they do. They are more interested in the Maha, the great vehicle teaching. So they talk about Heart Sutta, Diamond Sutta, Surangama Sutta, Lotus Sutta, all these high-flung Sutta, then Six Patriarch Sutta. Then they like to use the Zen analogy, the flag and the wind. Then the famous poem of Hui Ning and Shen Xiu. So they go and memorize all this, then they go and teach. Understand? So like the Six Patriarch Sutta early on we went through, even when Bodhidharma came over to China, Buddhism was already in China for many years before Bodhidharma came. Then you look at the second patriarch, it's mentioned in the first few chapters. Yeah, where I go through the transcript, I saw it. According to the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, the Fahai, the chief disciple that received the transmission from Hui Ning, he helped to compose this Six Patriarch Platform Sutta. And he mentioned, although Mahayana was there in China long before Bodhidharma came, but it was as if it was not there. You know why? You can recall the early lesson. The second patriarch, what is his name? Ah, must check. No need to check. His initial name was Shen Kuang. Then later on, after he enlightened, Bodhidharma gave him the name Hui Ke. So, Shen Kuang, you know how fantastic he was at that time. It's mentioned in the Sutta. When he gave Dhamma talk, then he was trying to teach this Dhamma, the Mahayana teaching, that can liberate living beings from birth and death. Means solve their problem of birth and death. Means bring about enlightenment. You know what happened or not? According to the Sutta, it's in our Six Patriarch Sutta. Those with the psychic ability, with the third eye, they can see, He said, the heavens, they will rejoice and rain down all these very, very fragrant type of, you call it, it's a type of flower with very good fragrance. Then he said, from the floor, there's a lotus seed, come out for him to sit, to deliver the Dhamma. If you got psychic, you can see all this. Do you believe that he is enlightened? You sure believe it, correct? No? The devas are all like respecting him like anything. No? Then it so happened Bodhidharma passed by. No? Bodhidharma listened and he knew this is not the correct teaching. Cannot free. So Bodhidharma approached him after he finished his lecture and sharing. And you know this Shen Kuang, he got a lot of anger on it. It's like he whacked the Bodhidharma with the beads. When he lose the argument, he will whack you. Then the tooth almost came out. Luckily, Bodhidharma swallowed it. Then later, he regretted. Because Bodhidharma just asked him a very simple question. He said, what are you trying to teach people? He said, I'm teaching the Dhamma to free people from birth and death. Bodhidharma said, oh, okay. So what is it that you're teaching, is it? Then he showed him the sutta. He said, how can this free people from birth and death? The words are in black, is it? The paper in white. Black and white. How to bring about cessation of birth and death? So Shen Kuang knew that this person has caught him off guard. Well, he cannot explain how to go beyond birth and death. Then he got very angry. That's why he whacked him. He said, how can you say that? Can't you see the heaven rain all this flower with the very nice fragrance and the lotus seed coming out? You somehow doubt me, I said. He mentioned like that. So, you know, Bodhidharma doesn't want to seek further problem or trouble. So he just walked away. Then after he walked away, you know what happened to Sen Kuang? No? That night, the Yama, King Yama, sent his chief attendant to ask him to go. He said, your time is up. King Yama want to see you. Then Sen Kuang panicked. No? How can you take me away so fast? That time he was 40 years old. You know. He said, I got a lot of things to do. Isn't it? He said, King Yama said, you are no longer needed here. He said, I'm teaching people to be free from birth and death. You know, he said, why you say I'm no longer needed? He said, because there is now one who can teach. And you cannot teach. That's why you have to go. Then he panicked. Oh. He said, cannot be. The heaven rain flower and the lotus seed come out. If I'm not the one, then who else? Then the chief attendant tell him, do you want to know who or not? He said, yeah, I want to learn from him. That was the monk that you whacked with your beard. He said, and do you know, King Yama, he said, my king, every day pay observance and respect to him. Wow, gaulat. That's why he, after that he panicked like anything. Then he asked for forgiveness, he asked for more time. He said, give me some time. He said, I'm going to learn from him. That's how he went after him. Then you remember, on the way, there's a bird trapped in the cage. You remember not? And this bird, I think got psychic also from past life. He knew Bodhidharma is an enlightened being. Is it? He's a great being from the West. He knows from the West. Teach me how to escape birth and death, he said. Means he wants to free from the cage. He don't want to be trapped. So Bodhidharma teach him very simple, he said. With eyes open, hand and legs stretched out. Means pretend to die. Then the owner come back, thought the bird die. Slowly open up the cage. Then use the hand to grabs the bird and take it out to check whether really dead or not. Then the tears came. You know, he saw the bird. Ayo, no more sign of life. You know, everything like no more sign of life. So he thought he died already. Then he slowly opened up his hand to see further whether it's really dead or not. Then when he opened up his hand, the bird still like in the dead position, but all of a sudden, because the bird knew the hand already opened, free, suddenly, pop, 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 he flew off. Then only the owner knew, he didn't die. So because he escaped, so when Sen Kuang went the direction to look for Bodhidharma, he met this bird. No? This bird said, yeah, that was the monk that taught me how to escape from the cage, is it? He teach me how to do it. Then he explained to Sen Kuang. Then Sen Kuang was full of faith and confidence. That's why he went to, I think, Shaolin Temple or the Nohan place. Bodhidharma was facing the wall, remember? 9 years. He sat with him. And he seek his advice. Then later on, I think the story continued. The Bodhidharma saw that this Sen Kuang is really different. Now he has lowered his ego, no more the anger, very sincerely seeking the Dhamma. Then he came out on the wall, he talked to Sen Kuang. He said, what is it that you want? He said, I came here to seek none other than the teaching, to go beyond birth and death. Yeah. Then Bodhidharma look at him. He said, you remember what you did to my tooth or not? So Sen Kuang apologized. He said, you think by just apologize, I will teach you? He said, don't dream. Unless one thing happens, he said. You look at the sky, he said. What is falling down from the sky? Sen Kuang answered, snow. What color is it? White. He said, not until the sky red snow, I will not teach you. That was the condition for him to chop off his hand, then splash the blood all over the snow. That he held on to the red snow and told Bodhidharma, now the sky has rained red snow. That's how Bodhidharma knew it's about time to teach him. He said, so be it. So be it. We have condition fulfilled. Then he teach him. Then the moment Sen Kuang was like expecting the Bodhidharma to teach him, he was full of joy. Then he get ready to receive the teaching. So Bodhidharma asked him a very simple question. He said, what do you want to know? What is your problem? Then at that very moment, Sen Kuang suddenly realized that the hand he chopped off earlier spilled with blood because he was very determined. He forgot about all this. All of a sudden, the pain came back. He said, my heart pain ache. He said, this is hurting me. You know what Bodhidharma asked him? He said, show me your heart. I will heal it for you. If Bodhidharma asked you this, what are you going to answer him? Show me your heart. He said, my heart. What a sing tong. Show me. You know what happened? Sen Kuang checked everywhere. He cannot find his mind. He said, I checked everywhere. I can't find my mind. And the answer came, that's how I heal it for you already. And he immediately became enlightened. This is it. I already heal it for you. Because now he know the mind is not within the form of mind, the true mind. Understand now? This one that is suffering all this is not the true mind. That's why he can't find. He search everywhere for the mind. He cannot find. Well, by then, Sen Kuang already knew that all these are not real. And because of what Bodhidharma mentioned, just from that word, I have already healed it for you. He straight away became enlightened. But he knew that true mind, that true nature has got nothing to do with all this. That's why he cannot find. But he was attentively silent, completely silent. Then everything like doesn't affect him at all. Then he cannot find. But when the thought don't arise, the mundane mind don't arise, he cannot find. Then with that word, I have already healed it for you, means that awareness which is aware of all this is the true mind. That's why he awakened. He straight away become enlightened and he received the mind-to-mind seal from Bodhidharma, just like that. That's why from then onward, he know what that true mind is. He cultivated with that, he became the second patriarch. Then Bodhidharma told him, he said, all this will continue until the sixth patriarch arise. He said, you have to lie low because they are purging all these people. Because even before he met up with Bodhidharma, they attempted to poison him 6 times. That's why they did all sorts of things until the emperor also don't like him. That's how he went to the temple and go face the wall for 9 years. Because people were jealous of him and has a lot of enmity towards him. So he told Sun Quang, you have to lie low. So at the age of 40, he became enlightened. He lie low until 80. At the age of 80, only he come out and teach. When he come out and teach, he get into trouble again. Then people come after him. And he has to pretend to be? What did he pretend to be? A fake. Understand? Not? A fake one. Understand? Not? Like screw loose already. You know? You go and read. Wait till the book come out. It's very good. It's very interesting. And he was executed, you know. Not? The second patriarch, the third patriarch, and the fourth patriarch, their lives were very tough. The fifth patriarch not so bad. Then he said, not until the sixth patriarch, Mahayana will not flourish. After the sixth patriarch, it will flourish. Then no need to pass down the bat and the rope. That's why our trip to China, you saw the golden bat and the golden rope. So all this is how the history comes about. So that lesson 3 was very good. It shared a lot of this thing with you all. So take time to read through the transcript when it come out. I think very soon. Brother, I sent to him. So maybe you take your time to prepare. We can do up both together, send to the printer. So no need to two time. And we can distribute. So there are a lot of transcripts that they are doing now for me. I cannot do fast enough. They did the transcript until lesson 9. I only completed lesson 3. So I still got quite a bit to go. But all this that come out later on, you go through, is going to be very, very different. And after this, you go through, it's like a revision. You will understand it completely differently. And some of you maybe will awaken to it. Because it's now so different, so clear. And we have improved on the colloquial language. We have smoothed out the language use. But if you want to listen to the true recording, it's more accurate. You listen, it's direct. But the transcript, we have to make it readable, so that people understand. So I have adjusted some of the colloquial language. Then the people who helped me to do it also, they are very good. Puan Chi and Sister Hong. So they have helped me to actually improve on the flow of the language. Then sometimes they don't understand what I meant, so they change it wrongly. So I have to redo it. But so far, so good. As they pick up, they understand, then they will improve on the, we call it the draft copy of the transcript. They come out with the draft copy. Then I will edit the thing. Then I will make it more readable, so that people can develop the understanding. So you all should thank all these people. For the condition, for the hard work that they have put in, the sacrifice, so that you all can have the condition to receive all this teaching in transcript form, and properly documented. Then there is also the website that has the recording, so you can listen to it anytime. Then you can check against the transcript if you are not sure. So all this is going to be very useful. Shall we rejoice and thank them in the usual way? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so you got any more questions?
Just to say, actually, there was a day when Tuesday class. Nowadays, we have like every week we have somebody teaching and all that. Then I was telling myself, what should I choose? I think I should choose the subject karma. It's very challenging.
Yeah, so we reserve for you. subject. Very
especially
good.
Especially to me, this subject has always...
That topic is very interesting.
Very challenging to me because you know my view on karma.
Yeah.
So even until now, it's like it takes a lot of my time to contemplate of it. So I do my chanting after that, my aspiration is may it arise conditions for me to have situations where I can learn and understand the subject of karma itself.
Okay.
So it's just like every other time I will see something popping out, just like last night.
That's why I
tell myself it's like
very good.
I have the good parami to have a good teacher or teachers that have the right view, and I am able to
straighten
have the
your
right
view.
Teachings.
Straighten
so
your view.
I take it that is one of the main subjects that about karma itself.
Thank you. So you already have the condition. What chapter is that? Come on. Is it the next chapter? Oh, not yet. A few more chapters. After that, we reserve for you karma. Very good. So sadhu. So now it's almost 5 o'clock. You can have your meditation. Maybe 20 minutes of meditation. We're off the light. Then you can have 20 minutes of meditation. Okay. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those that are now slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness that you have developed for as long as you can. Then these are the mind state, trained mind state that you need to use to develop the daily mindfulness. Okay, now you will continue your next session, which is reporting on meditation, and followed by Q&A, question and answer. You got any question regarding meditation, regarding the teaching, you can ask. Okay, now we open it up. Anybody, just raise your hand. Anybody? Nobody to report meditation. Okay, then I read to you this appendix. I think this appendix is very useful. It's from the Heart Sutta. Just now we were at appendix 5, 10 Dhamma Right. Then I saw this appendix 6. This is a very old appendix. This is regarding the training of the mind. How to train your mind. So training the mind, appendix 6. We are understanding the essential Dhamma and meditation as taught by the Buddha. So if you understand the essential Dhamma and the meditation as taught by the Buddha, you will know how to train your mind to develop the meditation. So this topic is very important. And in bracket, these notes will compile mainly from various talks given by me, Brother Teo. One of them is at Tiratana Buddhist Society Klang on the 20th June 2014. And that was about 3 years ago. Thursday class, especially the one held at Brother Suyan's house on the 10th July 2014. And the March 2014 Cameron Highland Retreat at Sampo Temple. So the first aspect of training the mind consists of understanding what is a trained mind. So let us go through as a revision. What do you think is a trained mind? What is a trained mind? Use the mind,
Brother Teo, a trained mind is a heedful mind.
Heedful mind, very good. So to be heedful is to have the mind that is trained. Because heedfulness will lead to enlightenment. The Buddha mentioned heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. So what is heedfulness is the next question. Because you have to go step by step. You understood the teaching, you know how to train, then you will know that the trained mind is a heedful mind. And what is a heedful mind? Let us go through one by one. What is a heedful mind? So a trained mind is a heedful mind. A trained mind is heedful. Heedful means what? So what is heedful? Heedful equals to be heedful is what? To have heedfulness, you must have two parts. What are they? Ever mindful plus ever mindful plus constantly meditative. meditation. Means constantly cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path. Constantly meditative means cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. Yeah. If you are mindful alone and cannot be ever mindful, you cannot be heedful. That's why in all meditation, you have to train your mind to be mindful first. You can't even be mindful, then you cannot reach what Huineng mentioned, the state of no thought. When you are mindful, aware, you are without thought. Then to be ever mindful means you have to stabilize this mindfulness to be ever mindful. So mindfulness needs to be stabilized. Mindfulness. Needs to be stabilized. Yeah. For it to be mindful, your mindfulness needs to be stabilized. Then constantly meditative means constantly cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. Yeah. So such a mind has what characteristic? When you are ever mindful without thought, what is your state of mind? Yeah? What is your state of mind? When you are ever mindful without thought means you are not heedlessly lost in thought, isn't it? You are no longer thinking, isn't it? Then what is your mind state? You better bring along your heart sutta note and read. If this one you cannot understand, you cannot cultivate, understand? You must know what is a heedful mind, what is a trained mind. After you are trained, what can your mind do? How is it like? If this also you don't know, then how can you cultivate? It's like a dog, eh? You train the dog. If it's trained means it listens to you, isn't it? Correct or not? You say sit, it will sit, isn't it? So the mind, like I used to tell you, you want to be silent, it will be silent, isn't it? But it's trained. You want it to be mindful, it will be mindful. You want it to contemplate, reflect, understand, it will do. That is what a trained mind is. Because it is heedful, it listens to you, it serves you. That's why I put in the notes here. When you read, you cannot understand, you should ask me. But I don't know how many people read. The note has been there for so long. If you don't read, you cannot benefit, you cannot understand. So now I read to you, huh? You read together. Huh? I read first. A trained mind is always silent. True or not? The moment is ever mindful, is without thought. How can it chatter? How can it, like inside that, they call it verbalize, or think, or become heedless and lost in thought? No, the moment is heedful, it's just aware, ever mindful. That's why it's silent. So a trained mind is silent. Read it out. Hey, read it out. A trained mind is silent. Then what else? Heedful, eh? Like on the whiteboard. Yeah. So a trained mind is always silent, heedful. Because it is silent and heedful, it's peaceful. Then what else? It's relaxed. All these are the characteristics of a trained mind. If you don't understand all this, how can you train your mind? Then the last one is what? Naturally aware within. That's why it's ever mindful. Naturally aware. On its own, it's already aware. You don't have to focus, concentrate, or do anything. So this is very important. That's why my first sentence is, a trained mind is always silent, heedful, peaceful, relaxed, and naturally the way we did. If you don't even understand this and have none of this, then your mind is not trained. You are still far away. You have a lot of work to do. Then the second point is, it has the clarity born of inner peace. If you are not ever mindful with inner peace, you don't have clarity. If the mind is not peaceful, it will think. It will have a lot of problems. It will be restless. It will have a lot of worry. Then you will have a lot of sorrow, lamentation, all those things. So a trained mind will have this quality, always silent, heedful, peaceful, relaxed, and naturally aware within. It has the clarity born of inner peace and inner awareness to see things as they are, leading to the wisdom needed to arise the wise attention or yoniso manasikara at every moment of sense experience. So that one is always at peace with the moment to live life. See? These are very important. If you don't read through and develop the understanding, you cannot understand. And this thing has been around for so many years. And we already take the trouble to summarize it for you and put it into transcript form, appendix for you to learn, to go through, to understand. So this is very important. Then the third point is also very important. Like just now I mentioned, if it's trained, like the dog trained, it listens to you. Correct or not? That's why I say a trained mind will listen to you. If you want it to be silent, it will just be silent. If you want it to be peaceful and aware, it will just do so. If you want it to be mindful, reflect, contemplate on anything, it will just do so. Then the next point is, you can use it and direct it appropriately to cultivate noble eightfold path, leading to heedfulness. That is what a trained mind is. It will become like a servant to you. It will serve you well. A trained mind is ever mindful and constantly meditative. Hence, it's the basis from which wisdom will keep on arising. Now you understand what is a trained mind. That's why you have to have this trained mind, which is a heedful mind, peaceful mind, the mind that is silent without thought. That's why the silent mind that is naturally relaxed and aware within. These are the characteristics of a trained mind. And you're supposed to train your mind to have all this. Then you will progress very fast. Then you will understand. Then the second part is the opposite, an untrained mind. What is an untrained mind? What is an untrained mind? It's the opposite of the trained mind there. So, what are the characteristics? Chattering, heedless, and all those things. That's why you have to write it down. You have to reflect, contemplate, and understand. If you can't understand what is an untrained mind, you go and look at your mind. Understand? If you already trained, you will have the first characteristic of a trained mind. It's still untrained, and all the funny things that you do is what an untrained mind is. That's why I put here, an untrained mind is heedless. Heedless means what? It cannot be mindful. If it's not mindful with the moment, what does it do? It thinks a lot, isn't it? That's why an untrained mind is heedless. It thinks a lot and reacts easily to sense experience. And is constantly lost in thought most of the time. As per Dhammapada verse 21, the heedless are as if dead. You don't stand a chance at all as far as enlightenment is concerned. That's why you have to be very, very mindful not to be heedless. Then the heedless mind or the untrained mind is like a devil's workshop. And it will make you very evil. You know what is a devil or not? It's an evil being. Devil's workshop means it takes over your mind and run it like a workshop. He likes to do whatever he likes. Then you have no control over it. It actually controls you and takes over your life, causing you suffering. The thinking mind, the mundane mind, which is heedless, need to be trained. But not the true mind, understand? Deluded with wrong view, it easily becomes angry, selfish, emotional, and fearful, hence the suffering. These are the characteristics of an untrained mind, because it has delusion. So deluded with wrong view, it easily becomes angry, selfish, emotional, and fearful, hence the suffering. It has got no understanding of what is going on in life. It lacks wisdom because it's deluded. Means it don't have right view. Then the third part is very important. Training the mind. How do you train the mind? This is all meditation. That one is just a method and technique, sweeping method. More important is, how do you train this mind? You must have understanding. So without wisdom, living beings are heedless. Hence they suffer, because they don't understand life. So to understand life, one must understand the secret of life, which is the Four Noble Truths, as taught by the Buddha. Then from there, you cultivate the right view and straighten your view. Straightening your view means less avijja. Less avijja means less ignorant, less sankara, less thinking. Then there is more clarity, more awareness. This is how you progress. If you don't straighten your view, it will continue to react to sense experience, and your mind cannot settle down. It will continue to grasp, cling, and hold on to things. So to understand the Four Noble Truths, one must train one's mind to be heedful, to understand what is going on in life, so as to understand who are you, what are you, how our mind functions, so that we understand what causes us suffering, and how our deluded mundane mind get muddled up in life. Then the fourth point is, the untrained mind is heedless and not peaceful because of the five mental hindrances of sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and doubt. These mental hindrances will hinder one from entering the meditative state of inner peace with inner awareness, etc. And to overcome the five mental hindrances, one only need to cultivate the opposite five spiritual faculty of Sadda, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya, as taught by the Buddha. When the five spiritual faculties are there, the mental hindrance will cease, and the mind will be trained automatically. That's why you should work on the cultivation of the five spiritual faculty via your puja, or devotional practice, and daily religious routine, means your daily mindfulness. Then the three phases of Dhamma cultivation are Pariyatti, Patipatti, and Pativeda. Phase 1, Pariyatti, is the learning of the teaching of Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. Then phase 2 is Patipatti, which is the cultivation of the Buddha Dhamma. Means when you put the Dhamma into cultivation after you have learned them. When you develop the Dhamma cultivation via daily mindfulness, means you put the Dhamma into practice in daily life so that it can become a living reality. Then phase 3 is Pativeda, where you get to reap the fruit of your hard work, your cultivation. Then there is a table that explains the three turning of the Four Noble Truths, the three phases of Dhamma. So when it comes to Pariyatti, you can develop it with the Sadda and Virya. When your faith is developed, you will know who the Buddha is, how important this teaching is, and it will give rise to Virya, or spiritual zeal. to motivate you, to cultivate, to give you the energy to move forward. Then you will develop it through the first turning and the second turning. First turning is listening to the teaching. They call it Suttamaya Panya, the first turning wisdom, born of hearing. And nowadays you can read about it, born of hearing and reading the Sutta or Dhamma as taught by the Buddha, through Dhamma talk, recording, books, notes, transcript, etc. Then the second turning is to reflect upon what you have heard, contemplate and inquire, giving rise to the second turning wisdom, which is called Chintamaya Panya. So when you contemplate, reflect and inquire into all the teaching, so that you can stabilize and assimilate all the Dhamma that you have heard and read about, to set the base for further understanding later on via any of the first, second or third turning cultivation. Then Patipatti is phase two, where you develop sati, samadhi and panya. So bhavana maya panya, or wisdom born of the third turning, is the wisdom born of cultivation, of the meditative training. Wisdom born of meditation, bhavana, of the meditative training. The moment the mind is silent without thought, you are already aware in sati. So use the silent mind to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. That is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, so that you can become heedful. Then a truly silent mind sees the real Dhamma. We are seeing things as they are. So this one is very important. So my advice is, you have to train the spiritual faculty until they become unshakable, balas. It is not difficult to cultivate Patipatti if you are ready, or if you are really determined and sincere. Just cultivate the spiritual faculty of Sadha, Virya, Sati, leading to Samadhi. Samadhi is Sati. When stabilized, they will accumulate into Samadhi until they are unshakable. Excuse me. Then the mental faculties will become spiritual powers or balas. Then wisdom will keep on arising, and then you will awaken. So this one is phase two of Dhamma cultivation, or Patipatti. Means cultivation, we are putting the Dhamma learned into practice in daily life so that it can become a living reality. Then phase three, of course, this is the most beautiful phase of one's life, when one can truly live life to the fullest, leading to a noble life, living the life of a enlightened being, Arya, awakened one. So phase three, Dhamma, Pativeda, is having the ability to reap the fruit of your cultivation, your hard work. The importance of sati to walk the path of Dhamma. Sati is very important, or extremely important, because without sati, one will be heedless. Without sati, one will not be able to follow the advice of the Buddha to strive on with heedfulness, paramatena sampadeta. Without sati, one will not be able to follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, to build and purify one's mind. We are following Dhammapada verse 183. Without sati, one will not be able to keep one's precept. Without mindfulness, you cannot see your mental intention. Then without sati, there will be no five spiritual faculty. Then without sati or mindfulness, there will be no four foundation of mindfulness practices. Where you need mindfulness to cultivate four foundation of mindfulness. Without mindfulness or sati, one will not be able to investigate the Dhamma, Dhamma Vichaya. Then without mindfulness, there will be no factors of enlightenment. The first factor of enlightenment will not be there. Then without sati, there will be no Noble Eightfold Path cultivation too. Just to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, you need sati. That's why sati is very important. Mindfulness is very important. Then you have to train this mindfulness until it's very stable, leading to samadhi. Then the important advice for meditator, you listen, this is very important. The first advice is, don't try to know anything during meditation. Just silence your mind, relax, aware. And through that, the awareness will understand. Then just silence the mind and let things be. The understanding will arise on its own. The moment you are truly silent and relaxed, sati is already there. This is the silent mind that can investigate into all phenomena. Then let the phenomena tell you the story. Don't go and look for the story using your thought or Dhamma knowledge. The pitfall of thought-based meditation is one is limited by the instrument that one uses to develop the meditation. Hence their inability to realize the enlightenment which is beyond thought and beyond mind. One needs to inquire deeply to find out for oneself who is the meditator. If it is the thought which is actively doing all the noting, labeling, chattering, verbalization, and trying to describe the Dhamma and trying to develop the meditation, then that is not the silent mind. The real Dhamma can only be realized when you are truly silent. Yeah, all those are thought-based meditation. Yeah? Then using the silent mind, which is in sati, samasati. When your mind is silent without any thought, you will understand everything that is going on within your five mental aggregates of form and mind. And you will awaken to the three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, and non-self or empty nature, which are anicca, dukkha, and anatta. You will understand how upon contact consciousness comes to be, and then how within the content of consciousness you will see how your mind stirs. After you input your mental intention, born of your wrong view, then how upon contact the seven universal, which are common to all consciousness, arise simultaneously. The feeling part, you will feel it clearly, and you will understand how upon contact feeling arise. But because you don't have wisdom, or you lack yoniso manasikara, wise attention at the moment of sense experience, feeling will immediately condition craving. Hence, without wisdom or yoniso manasikara, you cannot cut a feeling. So that is very important. You will see all this within your meditation. And that is the real direct seeing. That is how you will come to understand clearly that this condition arising mind, the stirring of the mind and the reactive mind, are not your true mind. They arise because of your wrong view. Then the Four Noble Truths, one by one, you will come to understand them. You will come to understand the realities of life and existence, what is suffering and the cause behind its arising. Then there is a note that explains the seven universal within the content of consciousness. Pali is called Sabbacitta Sadharma Cetasikas. So they are common to all consciousness. Saddha Rama is common to all consciousness. Sabbacitta is all consciousness. That's why it's called Sabbacitta Saddha Rama. Means common to all consciousness. They perform the most rudimentary and essential cognitive function, without which consciousness of an object would be impossible. So the seven universals are contact, feeling, sanya or perception, chetana or volition, ekagata or one pointedness of mind. Then jiviti indriya, the life faculties. Then the last one is mana sikara, or attention. So these are the seven universal. You will see it in the meditation. Then there are five ways to overcome unwholesome thought or negative mental state. The Buddha taught five ways to overcome unwholesome thought or negative mind states during meditation. So this one we have gone through. You can go back and read on your own. The first two is, of course, thought-based. So the first two way is, as you have gone through, first one is to think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. So this is thought-based, to develop the, to abandon the unwholesome thought. Where you can only do thing one at a time. When you are angry, you cannot be happy. When you are heedless, you cannot be peaceful. So when you have anger or hatred or selfishness or fear, then you should think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. Then that fear, that unhappiness, that anger, that selfishness, they will all cease. So if you got anger, you should reflect and contemplate on loving kindness. Then the anger cannot arise. Then when there is fear, you should reflect on the sadha, the faith in the Buddha and his teaching, the confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. So it will calm you down, the faith will calm you down. Then like you got cruelty, you can think of the direct opposite wholesome thought, which is compassion. So all this, you can develop it accordingly. And the other one is, when you are selfish, you have to reflect on contentment. The non-greed, the danger of greed, hatred and delusion. So that is the second way, to reflect and contemplate upon the danger and grave consequence of holding on to the unwholesome thought, which has the three evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion that can bring about karmic negativity. Then you arise the right effort to abandon the unwholesome thought. So the first right effort is very important. To arise the unarisen wholesome thought, then refine upon and perfect the wholesome thought that has arisen. Then to avoid, you have to arise the first right effort to abandon the unwholesome thought that has arisen. Then prevent the unwholesome thought from arising in the future via your understanding and wisdom. The third way is just to silence your mind, to train the mind to decondition it from the heedless thinking and grasping at sense experience. By just being silent and aware, without any thought, the mind will settle down on its own and return to its natural state or original state of inner peace and inner calmness, inner silence and stillness. So the remark is, the moment you are silent, you can come to understand that all this emotional negativity, born of the three evil roots or mental hindrance, they are merely conditioned arising mind state, and they are never you. There is anger, is never you. So you just relax, silent, you assist. That's why the third way is, just be aware, mindful, don't do anything. The understanding and acceptance of the reality of all condition, arising sensation and emotion at the moment of sense experience, without any reaction or stirring of mind, can lead to profound wisdom. So this is how the purification of mind can take place. So this is the third way to overcome whatever negativity or mental state. Then the fourth way is to trace and reverse retrospectively via wisdom, using the wisdom way. So this one, you have to trace the origination factor. Yeah? Then retrospectively reverse it. Using the silent mind to trace the origination factor of the negative thought or mind state, and then reverse it retrospectively. Train. The cultivator to develop the true understanding via mindfulness of the 6 internal and 6 external sense bases means you develop Dhammanupassana practices to arise the third turning wisdom born of meditation or bhavana, then giving rise to bhavana, maya, panya. Then tracing the origination factor of mental states under Dhamma Nupassana. Mindfulness of the 5 mental hindrances, then mindfulness of the 5 mental aggregates of form and mind. Then the third category of practice is mindfulness of the 6 external and 6 internal sense bases, followed by the mindfulness of the 7 factors of enlightenment, then mindfulness of the 4 noble truth. Yeah. So this one, they are all in the notes, teaching you how to develop them. So you go through them. Oh, almost time, I got to rush through. So mindfulness of the 5 mental hindrances. You are supposed to see how they arise. Usually through the 3 major sense doors of seeing, hearing and thinking. Then retrospectively reverse it via wisdom to understand how the arisen mental hindrance is to be. Then to counter the mental hindrance, we are cultivating the 5 spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Panya. Then after that, use the wisdom to straighten your views. Then mindfulness of the 5 mental aggregates of form and mind. See how the 5 mental aggregates come to be, their condition arising, hence impermanent suffering and non-self or empty nature. See how you deludedly grasp, cling and attach to them via self-delusion and sakkaya-ditti. Then mindfulness of the 6 internal and 6 external sense bases. When you have understood that these aggregates are form and mind. Sorry, when you have understood what these 5 aggregates of form and mind are, and you have developed a stable sati to be aware of them, then you can trace the origination factor via the mindfulness of the 6 internal and 6 external sense bases practices. To see clearly how the sense bases, the sense data upon contact with mind and their respective internal sense bases trigger off sense door consciousness and its related mental activity via the dependent origination. Then see how, due to wrong view, your mind stir easily. How you contemplate and reflect, you will realize that if you don't do anything via right view to see things as they are, it will cease to be. So this is the understanding. Yeah. Mindfulness is the 7 factor of enlightenment. This one you have to refer to the 4 foundation of mindfulness for further detail. Similarly, mindfulness of the 4 noble truth is also in the notes. Then reversing it retrospectively, this is key. So to do it, you must have the silent mind. The key here is to have a silent mind. A silent mind can trace all the origination factor to develop the much needed wisdom, yoniso manasikara, or wise attention, at the moment of sense experience to retrospectively reverse it via wisdom. As per the Satipatthana Sutta, you will come to know how the unarisen fetters or mental hindrance come to be. Then you will come to understand how the arisen fetters or hindrances to be, because you are mindful, aware. Then the 5th way is just for knowledge. The Buddha said, with teeth clenched and tongue pressed against the palate, one should, with one's mind restrained, root out the unwholesome thought. And in doing so, this evil and unwholesome thought of greed, hatred and delusion will dissolve, and the mind will inwardly become settled and calm. composed and concentrated, with samadhi. Sheer determination via a strong will, a very strong will to abandon the unwholesome thought. So this one, the Buddha said, if all the first four he has taught you, you also cannot do it, then you have to use your own will, very strongly, to abandon it. Then we end. Appendix 7 is not important, it's about the house builder. Dhammapada verse 153 to 154. If you're free, you better go back and read. Okay, let us end. Do the sharing of merits, transfer of merit, then we can end. Let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed over the past 3 hours or so. Then we shall delegate all these merits to all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva cirang rakhantu loka sasana itavata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo Satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, you pay respect mindfully to all the worthy ones.
Brothers and sisters in the Dhamma, next week the class will be cancelled because I won't be around. I'll be in Singapore. Then the following week will be. Then after that, we will have the class resume. Thank you very much.
Most of these people, they say that they want to collect, No, I will put that then they will take. They will still take, but what I need, what can I do for them?
Okay,
what
is that? You will have other
那个 reporter 关了嘛？
那没接。